In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
In case you hadn't noticed, government can be and often is dysfunctional. It gets bogged down with its own rules and regulations, let alone what they do to people and organizations. Layers upon layers of agencies and overlapping bureaucracies, and that's just the unelected officials. It's not surprising things don't get done. Sometimes, in fact, it's more amazing that anything gets done. But just because it's dysfunctional, does that mean you shouldn't talk about it? No. That's when you do talk about it. In fact, it is classic organizational dysfunction to not talk about it. A lot of organizations don't want to learn. They like the way they've always done it, and organizations will in fact lash out at people who try to help improve things. That's why what Trump has done at the national level is downright Herculean. By untangling regulations, forcing improved operations, focused on results and value, and not the old way of focusing on activity, Trump is getting things done. Just look at how vastly improved the VA is. Trump is also helping our farmers. He's getting trade deal after trade deal after trade deal done. And a major accomplishment was the 2018 Farm Bill, which legalized or re-legalized hemp, which used to be allowed until government interference and decades of organizational squatting on an issue. Hemp is big here in Oregon. How are things going with this new crop? We'll talk a bit about that, but today it's really a deep look at Oregon and Oregon politics. Because 2020 is a monumental election year. Is the Oregon Republican Party up to the task? So we'll talk about that with Jane Carroll. She is a radio superstar in Portland who has been following Oregon politics since before I got here in the mid-1990s. We'll also talk about some sneaky moves Governor Kate is doing to undermine timber unity and weaken the resolve of Republican senators. Glad you're here today as we focus on Oregon, what's going on, and what needs to be done. Jeff Kropp is a former state representative and fifth-generation Oregon farmer. If you're in the Salem area, he has a morning talk show, Political Coffee with Jeff, on KSLM. It's Monday through Fridays at 6 a.m. Jeff, it's great to talk to you as always.
Hey, Mark. Great to be back with you.
Yeah, so we're going to talk a little hemp, a little politics, just kind of a fun little conversation here. And, you know, hemp is used now for all sorts of things, and it seems like they're coming up with more uses every day. As I understand it, though, there are different hemp species for fiber production, you know, for rope and clothing and building materials and tons more. And then another one for CBD. So let's focus, though, on CBD since that's your crop that you started with last year.
Right.
2019 saw tremendous growth in hemp, especially for the CBD market here in Oregon. You gave it a go for the first time. What was your experience like?
Well, it was the jury's still out. And then the only reason I say that is because even though I had my crop sold before I even planted it, I haven't gotten paid yet.
Oh.
And so, we're just kind of waiting to see where the marketplace ends up in terms of pricing. And it's really all over the board. So, you know, for me, the jury's out. I like the crop. Even though I had never grown it before, I have no experience growing marijuana, so I don't know anything about cannabis. So I had to learn a lot in a short period of time. And I was very fortunate to know several people who were growing hemp and who had grown it very successfully in the prior 2 or 3 years. And so in many ways, they sort of mentored me and really kind of helped me avoid some of the mistakes. And I did pretty well in terms of both yield. I only grew 5 acres this year. But, you know, the lessons that you learn, I know so many things now different than what I thought the experience was going to be like. And I would not do those things again. I mean, experience is the best teacher.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, my advice to anybody who's thinking about growing hemp is to really assess a couple of things. Do you know how to grow hemp? Have you ever worked with cannabis before? Because no matter what crop you are growing, and I'm a fifth generation Oregon farmer, you have to grow a good yield. It's always about yield. If you can grow a good yield in any crop, if the price goes down, you can still make money. The price is really down in hemp right now, but because I grew a reasonably good yield with good quality product, a reasonably good quality product, I'll still make a little bit of money. A lot of people that I know are not only not going to make money, but didn't even harvest their fields.
Wow.
And it is, which is a stunning statement to make, but it's absolutely true.
Well, especially going into the year, people were predicting, as farmers could see, as much as $75,000 an acre. And if they're not even harvesting that, that's kind of shocking.
Well, and yes, and that's based both on yield and price. Both of those things in across the United States of America, because of the weird fall weather, especially in Western Oregon here where I grew hemp, was, you know, we were just the weather dramatically negatively impacted the crop. And so the first thing is assess your ability to grow it. The second thing is assess the marketplace, because nobody, there's a couple of things about the marketplace right now. No one knows how big the end market is, the retail market for CBD type products are, whether it's the tinctures and the creams that I use personally, and they help me personally. Nobody knows how big that market is. So the market needs to mature a little bit, and there have been a couple of impediments to that. And sadly, this is where the intersection of politics and hemp and CBD intersect. And it is the government regulatory scheme on the federal level has really been preventative. And I'm not talking about the farm bill, which allowed industrial hemp to be grown for both fiber and for CBD. But what I'm talking about is the USDA rules for THC, the FDA getting involved now, warning people you can't claim anything other than it is, you know, an unproven herbal supplement kind of a thing. And basically threatening to force the same standards on pharmaceutical companies in terms of clinical trials on people who are selling CBD products, which would basically kill the industry.
Hmm.
So we can talk about the politics. You just love how
politics, they jump in there. They're so helpful. Real quick, about a minute left in this segment. Sure. From the outside looking in, it seemed like there were some real bottlenecks. You had this huge uptick in growing CBD, tens of thousands of acres added to it. But was there enough infrastructure to handle that?
Not at all. Not at all. And it was one of the things that really saved my ability to have a marketable crop was the fact that I built a lot of the infrastructure for harvesting, which is nobody has harvesting equipment designed that is workable and patentable for this process. I built a machine that strips the buds and the leaves off of the stalk and the stem that was mechanical in nature as opposed to doing it by hand, which a lot of people did this year by hand because it's the only way they could do it. And then I built my own dryers to dry it, because here in Western Oregon, we have to dry it down to 8% level. Over in Central Oregon, Eastern Oregon, they can cut it in the field and let it lay for several days, and it will dry down on its own. And then they can harvest it with a combine, a modified combine. But we're a little different here on the west side. So The infrastructure for that was not there. The infrastructure for testing is not there. The infrastructure for selling it and for processing it into CBD, either crude, as they call it, or isolate or distillate. There just is not enough of that around. And what amazed me, Mark, was the enormous amounts of money that went into some of these hemp growing projects where they did not know how they were going to harvest or where they were going to dry it.
Wow.
Which is one of the things, as I got looking around when I first started, decided to do this, that's one of the reasons I decided I needed to grow the crop and control the harvesting and drying process portion of it. And that's why I made the investment to do that.
Well, good for you. I'm amazed, really, that more farmers didn't take that step, because it's not just growing the plants. You got to know what you're going to do with it afterwards. When we come back, we'll wrap up on hemp and shift a little into some politics on the hemp. We're going to be talking about how to get started in it. If you're interested, stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking a little farming and a little politics today here on iSpy Radio. Hemp is the new big cash crop, just booming here in Oregon. And we're talking with Jeff Kropp, a recovering state representative and fifth generation Oregon farmer. Jeff is deeply involved with and a promoter of Oregon's conservative grassroots. He's also executive director of Oregon Capital Watch Foundation. And so, Jeff, we were talking there about hemp. And so talk to us a little bit, like what you're saying there off air, in terms of the pricing of all of this and some of the impacts that's been having.
So the retail price is still very high. CBD is not an inexpensive product that you can buy on the retail level. However, the wholesale price to farmers like me has declined by about 70%. Now, that is because nobody, again, knows how big the market is. There were all of these estimates about how many acres were out there. And interestingly enough, the USDA says, in checking with all the state departments of agriculture, that about 500,000 acres nationally was registered for hemp to be grown in America. However, the USDA estimates that only about 50% of that was actually planted.
Wow.
And then of that number, again, based on data that the USDA is receiving from state departments of agriculture, like Oregon, they're estimating of that number, which is about 223,000 acres nationally, that only about 30 or 40% of it was harvested, which, again, is a stunning thing to think about because how expensive it is to grow this crop. You know, I have, with my production equipment and my dryers, and I've got well over $20,000 per acre in just growing the crop. So if you could, you know, the numbers that were out there, in fact, I know people that made $150,000 an acre last year. Well, 2 years ago, rather. Well, if you add in the expense of growing the crop and your price has dramatically come down, then it's the same old thing that we farmers always talk about, is you have to have a good yield. If you can have a good yield, you can survive lower prices. Lower prices, I think, even though they are going to come up, and they already are coming up, okay? So people who are thinking that I'm discouraging not to get into this business, I'm not. I think it has an enormous future here in Oregon. What I'm saying is that I think in the future it is going to be more like a commodity, because once Walmart and Target feel that there are standards of quality out there, which probably the FDA or the USDA is going to set at some point, that they then can offer that, and if there is a supply chain that's dependable, they will demand the lowest price unit. That means retail prices are going to come down. And it means that farmers like me are going to have to learn how to grow the crop really well and bring down both our cost of production and increase our yields so that we can still continue to grow the crop and make a decent return per our investment in it. So I think it has a bright future. I know the Oregon State University, the Extension Service, has established the Hemp Innovation Center with Dr. Jay Noller, has traveled all over the world looking at how the world grows hemp. I think that so many of the challenges that we have faced, the regulatory side could kill this thing. Both the USDA and FDA could literally put restrictions on us that make it such that it's not profitable for anybody to grow it, which means that people like me who benefit from using CBD on occasion, that I'm not going to have much of that product, and it's going to be very expensive. So my hope is that If people want to get involved, my best advice is do a lot of research. Don't jump in with both feet. Learn to grow the crop well. Have it sold somewhere in the marketplace. Know a processor that you can establish a relationship with. Know what they're looking for, and then be very careful in getting started. Don't spend too much money. Don't put yourself out there. There are people who are going broke personally right now this year because the bud rot came along with the September rains, rainiest September in 100 years in Western Oregon specifically. But it also impacted Central Oregon harvest. And so it, you know, certain there were crops that were never even harvested, fields that were even harvested.
Yeah, that's just shocking. Just real quick here, and I think we'll wrap it up here on hemp, is how do people find those processors? Because it sounds like, again, if you can grow the crop, you got to know what to do with it. So how would they find them?
It is, it's hard. There is no central clearinghouse. I mean, you can, people, the processors don't advertise. It's sort of word of mouth. So you kind of have to, if you know somebody who's a hemp farmer, ask them what processors they know of that they've talked to. Look for phone numbers. People are not advertising that they're processors that I know of. You know, maybe some are. So it is, again, it's a very much a fledgling industry in Oregon. It has a very bright future, but just be careful.
Yeah.
And get to know and establish relationships with people you can trust. And I have to tell you, there's a lot of crooks out here. There's a lot of litigation going on right now.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of unethical people in this business because they saw huge dollar signs. So be careful.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's go ahead and shift to Oregon politics. Oregon Capital Watch is your nonprofit that focuses on potential legislation, among other things that you guys do. We've got a new session starting. Talk to our audience a little bit about what you guys do, especially as you examine those bills and warn people about things.
Capital Watch Foundation is a 501c3. We can take tax-deductible donations. And in what we do with that money is we help educate the public to how state government is spending their money. And in that educational process, we also support other efforts that teach individuals how to become good researchers. So that they how to talk to their legislator. We sponsor what's called the Oregon Citizen Lobby War Room, and you can go to Oregon Citizens, plural, OregonCitizensLobby.org. And it's a once a week meeting of activists at the Capitol building only when they're in session. So the day of the big Timber Unity rally that will be on February 6th as this legislative session starts off on February 3rd, we're going to have the war room up and operating. Oregon Capital Watch is supporting that. We have coffee there, and we have speakers who come in, and we literally teach people, how do you testify in front of a public hearing? And that's a very intimidating thing. It was for me the first time I ever did it long, long time ago. But we teach people. We give them the confidence to know how to talk to their legislator to be effective in testimony. And if your legislator doesn't want to talk to you, we teach you how to talk to them anyway. And how to be effective.
And
so
people,
that's what we do.
If people wanted to get involved, can they do so remotely or do they have to be there in Salem?
They do not have to be in Salem. That's one of the great things. And I'm going to give a lot of credit to State Representative Mike Nierman, who developed a tracking system, a legislative bill tracking system that allows the average person sitting at home, say in Baker or Klamath Falls or Ontario or John Day or wherever, that they can literally read legislation and judge it on five conservative values, principles, if you will, and make comment about that. And then we enter that into our system, including amendments that happen with bills, because we all know that happens. They get amended and they change. They can do that from home, and that's incredibly invaluable.
Yes, yes.
So if we have folks that are, say, are retired teachers or who are like a homeschool mom, and she cares about education, and there's bills that have to do with education, she could be in Klamath Falls, and she literally could go to the, and it's called the Track Their Vote website, and you can sign up to be someone who reads legislation. And we all support that effort. You can read legislation. You can do it all from your home computer. You can do it at 2 o'clock in the morning in your pajamas if you want. You don't have to come to Salem.
That's awesome.
We want you to come to Salem because this is just – it's a way that we the people can have our voice heard and we can empower people. And I'll tell you.
That's right. And
they look.
Yeah, they do. And – know, that's really what all of us need to be doing is holding these people accountable for sure. So OregonCitizensLobby.org and also TrackTheirVote.com. And if you missed that, we'll have those up on iSpotRadio.com. So despite the stranglehold that Democrats have here in state-level politics, there is a lot of excitement and hope in the conservative Oregon grassroots. That next was Jeff Cropp. If you're in the Salem area, Jeff Cropp has a morning talk show, Political Coffee with Jeff, on KSLM. Jeff is a former state representative. In fact, my former representative. Jeff is a staunch supporter and promoter of Oregon's conservative grassroots and also executive director of Oregon Capital Watch Foundation. You can find that at OCWF.org. And as I mentioned, going on to that last segment there, there's a lot of excitement in the conservative grassroots, and I put that firmly on the excitement centered around Timber Unity. These are people that were in rural areas, and they just got fed up with big city liberals telling them how to run their lives, looking down on the people who provide their food and the raw materials and whatnot. In fact, Senate President Peter Courtney even told representatives from Timber Unity that, quote, you rural people just have to face it that your way of life is at an end. Just shocking stuff. And Jeff, you know, I think when I saw the Timber Unity there and I was there for their big rally last year. And as you mentioned, they have another rally coming up on February 6th. It just really seemed to take away the power from Salem and really restore power back to the people. We see this as bigger than the ORP, bigger than the Democrat Party. Is that how you see all of this?
It is. And I will tell you, it is profound what we're seeing happen here, because it's not just the Timber Unity people. It's other people that are coming into the conservative, liberty-minded movement. And that's how I yes. describe it, because that's really what it is. It's about liberty and our rights that are given to us by God, not by government. Our founders were very clear on that. And so it's broader than just Timber Unity, but Timber Unity has they're the biggest and the loudest. And what's happening is that other groups are coming in. For instance, Slavic Vote. These are people of Slavic heritage, European Slavic heritage, that have been in Oregon, either naturalized citizens or born here, but have never been registered to vote and have never gotten active politically. They are now.
Yes.
The old believer Russian community, and of course around the Salem area, you have Woodburn, there's a lot of Russian agricultural people and others. There's well over 100,000 of them that are getting engaged and energized because they did not want to lose their parental rights when it came to forced vaccinations. They got involved with us at the Oregon Citizen Lobby War Room. That then got them involved with the Timber Unity people who were also coming into the war room. And then we also got involved with the Oregonians for Medical Freedom. These are the moms, the liberal Democrat moms, who don't want to lose their parental rights when it came to the vaccination issue. And these groups are working together now. And I will tell you that at that Timber Unity rally that we had at the Capitol, where there were 2,000 log trucks in Salem, and they were circling the Capitol, farm tractors circling the Capitol, farm trucks, rural people who knew that the cap and trade scam is really what it is, would destroy their way of life. And that's what rural farming and natural resource is, whether it's ranching or whether it's logging or it's farming. It's a way of life.
Absolutely.
And that scared the living daylights out of the politicians. In all the years I've been around Oregon politics, and I've been around Oregon politics since I was 16, I'm going to be 61 soon, I've never seen anything like this. And I will tell you, neither had Kate Brown and Peter and Tina running the Senate and the House. And it scared them. And you know why it scared them, Mark? Because they
big
knew.
Big drugs.
Yes. Blaring their air horns. And they couldn't escape it. And they did it for hours and hours and hours.
Yes.
Exactly what's going to happen on February 6th, but it's the real thing behind it that scared them. You know what that was, Mark? It was the fact they knew it was not a fake, put-up lobby association-organized thing. It was real. It was real grassroots. And they knew that there was a lot of Democrats in that group that have been voting for Democrat candidates that aren't going to do it anymore. And that's the swing, those swing districts, that determines who the Speaker of the House is, determines if Kate Brown can ram this stuff down our throats, who the Senate president's going to be.
Yeah,
that's what has scared them. Now, I predict to you, Mark, that they know this is coming and that they are about to spring something on us that I think will scare the living daylights out of Republicans so that they don't leave the state, because that's the only way we're going to be able to stop this in the February session, for Republicans to walk away. They have a strategy. They've been thinking this through. Kate Brown has been out engaging in this strategy, and if you want me to explain what I think it is, I'll tell you. If not, that's fine.
Yeah, no, go right ahead.
So here's what it is. She has been, and I know this for a fact, she's been meeting with the big private timber owners around the state, trying to get them, trying to bribe them, okay, with special exemptions and things from the damage that the cap and trade law is going to do to their business, to their way of life.
The old carve-outs, yeah.
Absolutely. She's willing. I mean, look, she's willing to buy off whomever she needs to buy off with however much money she needs to get this to happen. The other thing that she's doing is there has been an attack in the Oregonian just yesterday by the far-left environmental reporter that's gone after the Douglas County commissioners, claiming that they're misspending federal Title III money meant to help fight forest fires. I believe that is all being orchestrated. I don't have any proof of it yet, but I believe that is all an orchestrated campaign, perhaps in coordination with the folks that run the Oregon legislature and Governor Kate Brown, all being done quietly behind the scenes by the environmental organizations to nullify one of the loudest opponents to cap and trade. And that is the Douglas County commissioners. All of this is meant to make it harder, I believe, for us as rural people, as us as people that even urban people, but just know cap and tax is a scheme and it's not real, and know that it will be incredibly damaging to Oregon's economic future.
Massively. Yeah.
And for no real gain at all.
No.
In any way. Any measurable amount.
No.
And you know that because you've covered it and you've talked about it on your show.
Absolutely. Oregon's output to carbon dioxide is 1/1,000,000th of a percent of global output in terms of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. It's just absolutely ridiculous that they're even thinking that somehow this would work. You know, it gets back to Plato. Plato said back in 349 BC, if I remember right, one of the penalties for refusing to participate in politics is that you end up being governed by your inferiors. So I really hope people will join your group. We'll link those up on iSpyRadio.com as well, just to get involved, because we cannot let this continue. You have to get involved nowadays. Jeff, unfortunately, we are up against the clock. But thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Mark. It's always great being with you. Let's do it again.
Absolutely. I'd like to welcome Jane Carroll to the show. She is a longtime radio host, formerly on KUIK in the Portland area, and now anywhere there's a computer or smartphone. You can catch her show streamed on Mondays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. on thejanecarrollshow.net. That's two R's and two L's, or you can look for that link on iSpyRadio.com. Jane, I have always been interested in politics since even elementary school. In junior high, I watched the Carter-Reagan debates with my dad. I have been a registered Republican all my life, but I didn't get involved with the party until 2009. And I know that you have been around the party much, much longer than that in terms of, you know, you were a campaign manager and all sorts of things. As I said, I got involved in 2009, the original Tea Party movement, Glenn Beck's 912 movement. Going in, I expected a really well-organized, well-oiled machine. I mean, this, after all, was the party's business and industry, and they've been at it since the 1850s, so you would think that they'd really have all of this just running smoothly. What I found instead was Clark W. Griswold taking the knotted ball of Christmas lights out of a box and handing it to his son to unravel. What is your view of party politics right now, especially here in Oregon?
Well, my view of party politics in Oregon, and boy, were you naive back in 2009.
Yes, I admit it. Yeah, absolutely.
You were a babe in the woods. I think my view of party politics in Oregon is – it's never been extremely strong in either party's case. And and one of the reasons is because of our primary system. And most states have had a party system that picks the candidates. Oregon, you have to, the candidates pick themselves and then build organizations independent of the party. And so by the time they get a nomination of the party is not well invested in that particular candidate, and people would prefer to give to candidates or to issues than to the party. Now, there have been better times when there's more, you know, the parties, certainly Oregon's Republican Party has had better days, and I think they're probably at the bottom at this juncture, and they have no place to go but up. And yet there's when you haven't been successful politically, there's a lot of anger and rage among the base and dissatisfaction and disillusionment. So it's really hard for party leaders to galvanize people when they don't have that much power.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and now correct me if I'm wrong, but way back in the day, wasn't it the party themselves that directly picked candidates? You know, you hear about the, you know, the smoke-filled rooms and all this sort of stuff. They picked the candidates, and then I can't even remember if they even had a primary system back in the day, but wasn't the party, didn't they used to be much more involved, and should they be involved?
I as far as I've watched Oregon party politics for a long time, they have always been second tier. Candidates form their own energy, and then the party gravitates to them as they become you know, elected officials or whatever, and then they use them, and then they build momentum off them, and they're, and contributors tend to give to a party that's winning or controls the legislature because that's that they're buying influence. So the party has never been the source of major money. And because Oregon in recent years, and particularly the Republican Party, has not had a lot of highly competitive races for statewide or congressional district-wide, the national party just stays out. And that's where the big money is.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. For sure. So I had a very odd thing happen. You know, you being on the radio, you certainly know what it's like. Cause, you know, somebody sees something on social media and they approach you and say, hey, what do you know about this? Could you find out more information about it for me? And someone had sent me a Facebook post that listed a really disturbing amount of open seats. Here we are 4 months out of the primary, and there's a huge number of open seats in which there were zero Republicans running. And they wanted me to find out what I could about this, whether it was true and so on. So I tweeted a partial list of some of the open seats on Twitter, addressing it to the GOP, and then asked, quote, can Oregon GOP address? And it turns out they didn't want to address. In fact, I had not one but two ORP members. They weighed in. One was basically blaming people for not running. You know, what's stopping you from running, you know, that sort of thing, rather than, you know, asking questions, you know, well, what would your suggestions be or anything like that. And then another member of the ORP jumped in and attacked me on a personal level. So there it is. And this is classic organizational dysfunction. You ask a question, two people within the organization blame you and then attack you. And I never did get an answer from the very person that I asked a question of, the ORP itself. Unless you consider blocking me an answer. So it just seems like that is the epitome of why people don't get involved and why organizations don't improve.
Yeah, I agree. I think the reaction was way over the top. I think if I were in the party right now as a valuable voice in Oregon politics, and you are, and a principled individual, then you are somebody I would want to contact and talk to. Maybe not on in social media, because a lot of the things that you have to discuss are sometimes not the best salesman kinds of things. The party is struggling.
Yeah.
The party is in, and they're up against the wall. And, you know, they do try to recruit candidates. They really do. But when they don't really have anything to offer in terms of money or a base, you have to create your own base. You have to generate your own money. And that's why, you know, some people, Newt Bueller, who's going to be, is running in the open district, the only Republican district that's been in Congress for many, many years now. He has his own organization. and his own money, but in as part of the process, he's alienated the Republican base, and he's also the real energy in the party seems to be among the conservatives, and he's more of a moderate, and so he has problems. So the party is splintered, and the best thing to build a party is winning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they haven't done that for a long time.
Yes, and that's very true. Winning certainly breeds its own success for sure. So, okay, let's go and take a break there. Come back. We'll continue this discussion with Jane Carroll about the ORP. Are they up to the task this year? Very critical elections for sure. Stay with us. And welcome back. Talking Oregon politics today. We're doing that with Jane Carroll. She is a longtime radio host, formerly on KUIK. She now has her own podcast and live broadcasts on Mondays and Thursdays, and then every third Tuesday, or is it every fourth Tuesday?
Every other.
Oh, that's right. Every other Tuesdays, Conservative Council. You can catch all of that on thejanecarrollshow.net. It's two R's and two L's. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. And Jane, in that last segment, we were talking a lot about how the Oregon Republican Party gets these candidates, and a lot of them tend to be self-selecting. And I mentioned that I had been blocked on Twitter now by the official GOP Oregon Party, their Twitter account. Frankly, I find it somewhat laughable in a way, but there was a real irony there, because the night that they had blocked me, that very afternoon, my producer and I had been talking to someone who is thinking about running for office. And she asked about, you know, whether it would be a good idea to connect with her local county party. And I said, oh, yes, you should absolutely do that. And so we really encouraged her to do that. And then she says, well, but I don't know. I hear such bad things about them. And then I end up getting blocked by the official Twitter account of the GOP. But, you know, we were talking during the break there that this kind of systematic issues and organizational issues, it's not just the Republicans. It's the Democrats, too.
No, and that's because the parties are not powerful in this state, and so they always have to overcome it. Now, if they, you know, if there's a momentum going and there's some national money coming in, and often that is funneled through the state party. It didn't happen during the Clinton years, because during the Clinton years, when she got the nomination and was running in 2016, she, as you know, had taken over the National Democratic Party and was raising, and she raised a lot of money for them, but she raised it from a lot of the same people that gave money to her, and they'd maxed out their legal contribution. You can give, as you know, Mark, a lot more to the party.
Yes.
$300,000+ limit for individuals versus, you know, a low double digit limitation you can give to a presidential candidate. So she hit them up. They wrote these massive checks. They would distribute them to the states with the instructions of to send it back to Albany, which was the center headquarters for the Clinton campaign, and they spent it on her campaign. So the party, the Democrat Party, was really hurt by Clinton last time around. Now, in the midterms, they got a lot of money. And so they rebuilt. Republicans, not so much. And midterms are always the time of lower turnout. And the people that turn out in midterms are usually angry. And that was the Democrats. They were angry. They were motivated. The Republicans weren't so angry. They had the House. They had the Senate. They had the White House. They were more pleased with Trump than they anticipated being. And they were getting tax cuts. And yeah, Obamacare, because of a Republican, didn't get repealed, but in general, there wasn't a lot of reason to turn out in great numbers at the polls. The Democrats, they hated Trump. They were motivated. They got a lot more money. They could target special races, and that's not going to be the case in the general election this time around. In Oregon, I live in Portland. In my House and Senate race seat, no Republican has run in decades.
Wow! Wow!
They don't even bother because they can't win. My precinct, I don't haven't checked it recently, but 3 or 4 years ago, it was something like 1,207 people. Six of them were registered Republicans.
Wow.
So it's a hard party takes on a really difficult job, and they get a lot of criticism a lot of the time. There are some very good people in the party, and there are some not as strong people in the party, because yes. It's not a career path that really is politically all that productive. And so I sort of admire the people that hang in there and keep trying, because they get slayed all the time.
Yes, they
that's
do.
That's why I'm surprised that they turned on you. Because, you know, you're not – I think it should be fixed.
It should be. And I do think that, you know, and again, the whole point of this discussion is not to grouse about being blocked, for heaven's sakes, by the Oregon GOP. It's about, let's look at some solutions. And I really do think that there are some solutions there for the ORP. For one, they have the potential to have a truly tremendous army of supporters. You had mentioned in that last segment there about, you know, they really don't have things to offer because they don't have – you know, a lot of funding and stuff that can get through people, but they can be doing things along the way to encourage people to run for those offices. They can be doing trainings. They can be, you know, welcoming people into that party. So that way, you know that when you run, you have people that will have your back. And I think that is something that can be truly effective if the party can start.
For people to go.
Yes.
You know,
exactly.
They don't know what to do. They yes. want to run. And they don't know anything about running. They don't know how to file papers or anything. You're absolutely right. And I think the party is there for that. But the problem with it is, and take, for example, our recent races that generate a lot of interest. Our governor's race last time. Governor, not very popular. Democrat governor in a strong blue state, but still not very popular. She was greatly aided by the good economy, the Trump economy. But she took credit for it, and governors get to do that. Meanwhile, the Republicans had several strong candidates running against each other, and those factions now hate each other.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Jane, unfortunately, we're up against the clock here. Let's go and take a break there. Coming back, we'll finish that thought and also look ahead to some of these congressional races here in Oregon. Stay with us. And welcome back. Talking Oregon politics today. We're here in our final segment with Jane Carroll. She's a longtime radio host, formerly on KUIK in the Portland area, and now you can listen to her anywhere via thejanecarrollshow.net. We'll link that up on ispyradio.com as well. And so, Jane, going out of that last segment there, we were talking about some of the political infighting. And, you know, sometimes you see this on Facebook and Twitter and whatnot, and I will put my head myself in the head of somebody that's not involved in politics, and you look at that and you think, why would I ever want to get involved in the party?
Yeah, and I don't think most people see that. I really don't. I think most people, that's not what, they don't go check on that kind of thing. I think the better answer would be the place to go when you do want to have access to the party. And I think they've tried certain things, and you really do have to be your own motivator and driver and form your own organization. Mm. And the party can help, but they've got their own issues to deal with. And if you want to run for office, there's some good people to talk to. There's some primers to do it. The party's a good place. But all this infighting doesn't serve either party very well. It's tough. But whenever I talk to a candidate, I say, look, you got to want to do this. Nobody's going to do it for you or take it over for you. So you got to do it. And it's a fact of life. In other states, it's not that way. But because they come from the ward politics system where the party picked you, the party told you what to say, the party, and mostly the Democrat Party. The Republican Party is not an organized party around a ward system. And so it's tough. It's tough. You either let the party control you or you put your own organization together. In Oregon, you have to put your own organization together.
That's right. Well, and there is some advantage to doing that on your own, because then you know that you're surrounding yourself with people that you trust, that you get to know and whatnot. So there is some advantage to that. But I really do hope that, you know, primaries are tough, and they ought to be. And I think it's a good way to winnow people out that maybe shouldn't be running, or that, you know, clearly would not win in the general. But once you get past that primary, it really is important to start coming together. And, you know, especially after the general is done, you know, put your differences aside, you know, come back together and let's reunite as a team. So I really would like to see that happen. In terms of some of the congressional districts, there is a surprising number of people that are running both in the 4th and the 5th and some of these other ones. Are there any standouts to you?
I'm reserving judgment on this. I think there's some good people running, but I'm not impressed with their organizations thus far. I'm seeing real amateur stuff, and that makes me nervous. It's always a sign that they don't know what they're doing. They're good people, but they don't know how to run a campaign, and they don't have anybody around them that knows how to run a campaign. That makes me nervous. I think there's a strong chance that the Republicans could hold on to the Walden district, but they can't take that for granted.
No, sure can't. No, absolutely not. What about in terms of the House, looking at that, do you think that they are going to get anywhere near breaking that supermajority?
No.
Hmm.
I hate to say that, but I do think that that's the one place, though, that the party is. There's a lot of energy and support for those few but brave Republicans who actually manned up and walked out. I think that provided some real people saying, I can get behind that. That's somebody
yes.
that's going to show some guts.
Yes.
Because on a national level, and we're seeing that now with the impeachment process of the Republicans. You saw how those Republicans handled it in the House.
Yes.
I felt pride. I felt energy. I want to support those people. The Republicans are so far holding together in the Senate, which is a more wobbly organization, politically speaking. That's what people can get behind. They're tired of having people wussing out on them.
Absolutely true. And whether it's politics or life, people will fight for fighters. Absolutely. So, Jane, unfortunately, we are up against the clock. We will have you back on soon. Thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure, sir. You have a great show, and say hello to your fine producer.
I will do that. And thank you for joining us today here on the iSpy Radio Show. We certainly hope that you're at least a little wiser for having been here. Just a couple of reminders before we go. The Timber Unity Rally is coming up on February 6th. Start time is still scheduled for 10 a.m., you will definitely want to be there early. Those big trucks will snarl traffic like you will not believe. Timberunity.com for more information. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. You know, if you want to get involved in politics, it is definitely not for the faint of heart. But there are people who can help you get up and going rather than sit there floundering. Jeff and Jane and even I can help point you in the right direction and make introductions. There is help out there. You just have to ask. And don't wait. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.